Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the show this week. My guest is Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes, talking to us by phone from his office. We'd love to have your questions for him in our next half an hour. You can call those in to area code 765-496-1999. Send an email to ask@wbaa.org and tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon. How are you?
Stan, I'm doing very well. It's good to be with you today.
A lot to get to in the show today, so I want to start out by talking about the fact that, interestingly, we've had a number of press releases from your fire department in the last couple of months about fires in the Frankfort area. We had a big one downtown there on the Courthouse Square. I wanted to start out with that one. It devastated two historic buildings, and I wanted to ask you if there has been a plan for what's going to be happening to those buildings, to the land that sits there, to nearby structures. What's the latest on that, since this was such a big to-do a few weeks ago?
Well, it really was a punch in the gut, and I feel so very much for those business owners and building owners. We've tried to stay in lockstep with them every step of the way. Number one, thankfully, no one was seriously injured. There was no loss of life. We did have one firefighter who suffered minor injuries. He has recovered and back on the job. Our firefighters did a wonderful job. And really, without the help of the Lebanon Fire Department, our suppression wouldn't have been as effective. The Lebanon Fire Department brought up an additional aerial truck, so they were able to battle the flames from the north. We were able to battle the flames from the south. And really, due to that teamwork, it allowed us to save half of a block of downtown historic buildings. So I want to thank Chief Batts and the Lebanon Fire Department. Now we are working towards getting this area cleaned up. That's really step number one. My mind has not even gone beyond getting the area cleaned up. That stretch of Washington Street from Maine to Columbia will remain shut down until all of the walls can get pushed in and that debris can be cleaned up. And that is basically because the walls that are still standing, the fall radius, if we were to have a strong wind, there could be bricks or debris that could hit a person or a car if they were walking in those travel lanes along Washington Street. So we have barriers up. So here's what we're doing right now. We have two structural engineers coming in that are going to be giving the city independent reports really on the immediacy of these buildings needing to come down. We can all see that visibly, but we want that in writing from professionals. We're going to package all that information together, and then our city attorney will be going to Superior Court here in Clinton County to ask a judge here in Clinton County to issue an order that these buildings do need to come down immediately. Right now, we have insurance adjusters and attorneys that are going back and forth, and that is all fine and well. I understand that there is a process that needs to be gone through there, but these buildings can't stand like this for another 2 or 3 months. For the good of the safety of the community, for the good of the downtown, we want to get this thoroughfare back opened up. So those reports should be completed by the end of next week. We will go to Superior Court. Hopefully we will get an order of immediacy where these buildings can be taken down, utilizing insurance monies that were held on the buildings. And then from that point forward, we can work together as a community with those landowners and figure out how we redevelop that key portion of our downtown square.
I have to say I was a little confused at a line in the press release we got from your fire department after everything had been put out and a couple of days had elapsed. It said that all accidental and incendiary causes of the fire had been ruled out. And I'm certainly not an expert in fires, but aren't those the only two types of causes, accidental or deliberate?
So there was more than one investigator in regards to this procedure. You had not only our local fire investigator, but you had the state fire marshal, you had ATF, and you had private insurance investigators that came in. Basically, I believe what they were trying to get across in that specific line was, Stan, that we do not consider this arson. There was nothing pointing to this that speaks to any criminal activity, that this was something that was accidental. the exact origin of the fire. All of those agencies could not come up with that exact origin of the fire, and I believe that's what they were trying to communicate through that specific line in the release.
So that was actually sort of our source of confusion, because when we started calling around on it, we heard the same thing, was that they weren't sure what happened, in part because a couple of the floors had collapsed on one another, and that made it hard to figure that thing out. But you've got all those investigators who say, we've ruled these things out, but they don't actually know, do they, where or how this all started. So how can you determine that?
Well, I'm certainly not a professional when it comes to fire investigation, but between the state fire marshal's office, ATF, private insurance investigators, and our local fire investigators, I'm confident if they come to us and they say this wasn't arson, there's nothing that can be proven criminally here. You know, I think we have to rely on their professional expertise. Now, we do know which building that the fire started in. It was the building to the far east. But in regards to a specific source within that building, just how much rubble and damage and chaos was there, they couldn't point to a particular item within that building that started that fire.
If a large fire like this cannot be solved as to its origin, do you think at all about the way it's being fought, or whether investigators have the necessary resources to do those sorts of investigations? And do you think that if something like this, especially if there is one that seems criminal in nature, doesn't get solved, and there was one this morning, you had another fire this morning on the north end of town that investigators have at least preliminarily said they believe was arson, is there a chance that people, the nastier elements of society, get emboldened by the fact that investigations don't produce results?
Well, I can tell you, our investigators have taken a couple different arson cases to our prosecutor over the years. I know that you mentioned the one on Delphi Avenue this morning. We had another situation earlier last year that occurred that was deemed to be arson as well. Our investigators do their job. I believe that we've given them all of the tools they need to perform their job in the 21st century. Obviously, we've invested heavily in the public safety, and if there were other tools that they thought they needed, I know they would communicate that to us, and I will continue to advocate for giving them the tools they need. And then once that's handed over, then it's up to the judicial system, our elected prosecutor, judges, and juries to carry out that arson determination. But again, with this specific fire in the downtown, multiple agencies were involved from multiple different, not only on the local level, but the state level as well. They are confident that it wasn't criminal or arson, and I have to rest in their professional opinion.
The third blaze was at your city's golf course, where we're told an electrical malfunction caught a maintenance building there on fire. You and I have talked a number of times on this show about the golf course and how it runs very close to its budget anyway and has had trouble making money in some cases. Does this represent a significant hit to the golf course and to paying to get it up to the standard that you have talked about getting it up to?
Well, it's been a rough month for us with the fire in the downtown, and then we turn around a week and a half later and have a severe fire in our maintenance barn at the golf course. It's tough, but when you're in a city even of our size, we're smaller, but even a city of our size, you know, things like this happen, and you have to step up and meet them. Now, what I will say is I'm so thankful the Board of Public Works and Safety and myself, we contracted with a professional insurance appraisal company who came in and did a full audit of every city building and all of our pieces of city equipment, actually just last year, to make sure that we were properly insured across the gamut in this city. Heaven forbid something like this were to happen. So having that audit done allowed us to get our insurance levels where they needed to be, and because of that, we are going to have the funds we need to replace all of our grounds equipment and then turn around and rebuild that maintenance barn. So as bad of a hit as that was, it will not impact the city financially because we are properly insured. We carried out our due diligence with that this past year. Those are things that don't make it in the headlines of the newspaper or on the radio because they're not as glamorous, but they're an important part of running a city, and I'm proud we did those fundamentals correctly. Are we behind the eight ball being 6 weeks away from golf season? Yes, we've got a lot of work to do, but my Board of Works member, Jim Siegfried, he was a former insurance guru in a previous life. He's done a wonderful job having face time with the insurance adjusters and investigators, and we are on the ball in regards to not only getting our equipment replaced for the golf course, but getting our maintenance barn rebuilt. So I want to assure all the golfers out there that we will be up and operational, and we're looking forward to a great year at the Frankfurt Commons.
Will it be open on time?
Yes.
Okay, so you're not expecting any sort of delays because of the fire?
No, sir.
All right. This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Frankfurt Mayor Chris McBarnes. Call in your questions at 765-496-1999 or email them to ask@wbaa.org. You've announced that your city is hiring Annie Bacon as the city's first community development director. What is this job role going to do, or what do you want it to do that you felt hasn't been able to be done before?
So as our city grows and we continue to be progressive, there's a lot more opportunities that we can go out and capture and make Frankfurt a modern place to live. But that comes with building a strong workforce and giving us the tools and resources we need to do that. It's been all hands on deck. I mean, for example, I as mayor, I really am a one-man band in regards to communication, in regards to all of the handling of social media, going out and recruiting businesses, programming in our downtown, and I'm going to continue to do that. But there's not enough hours in the day to get done everything that needs to be done. So our council coalesced around this idea of a community development director during our last budget cycle, and this person will be tasked with and charged with strategic communications for the city. All of the programming for Prairie Creek Park, festivals, cultural events, music events, this individual will be in charge of overseeing, along with programming at our neighborhood center to offer more events to our community, getting citizens plugged in with volunteer opportunities in the community, cleanup days, getting our youth engaged in quality of place initiatives. This person will handle that. We have many storefronts around our historic square that need to be marketed, that we need to go out and be aggressively and actively recruiting businesses like movie theaters or car dealerships to come into the community. This individual will help us do that, and they will also help be a lead ambassador and a marketing agent for the city. We need to do a better job of telling Frankfurt's story, talking about all of the opportunities that not only a business would have if they move here, but a family would have if they move here. And these are the types of initiatives that Annie Bacon, as our new community development director, will be engaged with. She will also be a liaison with the Redevelopment Commission, helping oversee infrastructure projects that the RDC carries out. And the last thing I'm really going to have her focus on is housing. Attracting new subdivisions, working with housing developers who see an area of opportunity in Frankfurt, and working with me hand in hand on how we get more of our beautiful Victorian homes, which have been chopped up into 5 and 6 unit apartment complexes, back to a single owner occupied situation, which breathes life back into our community.
You talked about her trying to fill some vacant storefronts and get some amenities into the community that you don't have. I'm going to take a minute here actually to plug something that WBAA is going to be doing in your city in the next couple of weeks. I don't know if we've told you much about this yet, so maybe you're learning about this for the first time along with a lot of the listeners. We've actually been pursuing a story about what amenities people want and what the city might not have that it could get. And so we're actually going to be holding a public forum at the downtown library there Tuesday night, March 5th from 6 to 8 p.m. But before then, we've actually put a link on our website to a survey that we've created. We're hoping people in Frankfurt are going to fill that out. And please, if you can, share that with all the people you know, Mr. Mayor. We're going to release the results of that at the forum and then give citizens a chance to talk about the results, express their feelings. We hope you and other elected officials will come and sit and listen to what the citizens have to say. And hopefully you can use some of the ideas that are being generated by this story. This all started from, you may remember talking with Emily Seiberg last month about the last dry cleaner in the city closing, and that got us thinking about, well, what sorts of things does a city need? Does it depend on the city's size or its location? And so we decided to have this kind of community conversation and develop a story around that. So, Mr. Mayor, we hope you'll join us Tuesday, March 5th from 6 to 8, and hopefully everybody listening in Frankfurt will do that as well. And maybe we can increase the amount of people having this same conversation.
I think that's wonderful, fully supportive, and I look forward to engaging in that with you, Stan, and WBAA. I thank you all for taking that on, and definitely the more people we can get to be a part of the conversation and plugged into this community, the better off we will be. So I applaud you for that.
One last question about the new creation of a community development director. One of the things I thought about when I saw that press release was, hey, this seems like it might have some overlap with what a chamber of commerce might typically do in a city. And it sounds like there's a little bit of that. Nonetheless, we saw in the press release, folks from the Chamber of Commerce said, hey, we're glad this is happening. How do you clearly draw the lines between what Annie Bacon's job is and what the Chamber of Commerce does?
Well, it was very important for us, and I agree with you. We don't want to be in competition with anyone. We're all one team here, and we value so much our chamber board and Shan Sheridan being our executive director, and that's why we actually made Shan a part of the hiring process. Both Shan Sheridan and the president of the Farmers Bank, Karen Gregerson, were both a part of the vetting process that eventually recommended this individual to the city council to be confirmed. So the chamber's fully on board. I think this allows the chamber to do what they do even better. You know, there's multiple towns throughout Clinton County that need their assistance and support just as much as the city of Frankfort. So as this position matures and grows into its own, I know that those lines of open communication will be there between Mrs. Bacon and our Chamber of Commerce, and we will find a natural flow and an order of responsibilities and commitments for each of these individuals. And In all honesty, I think it's going to accentuate what the Chamber is able to do and allow them to do their mission that much better, and they're already great at doing it. So I think it will be a good partnership.
We've got about 10 minutes left with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes on Ask the Mayor today here on WBAA. Call 765-496-1999 with your questions or send them via email to ask@wbaa.org. On the topic of city amenities and how the city spends its money toward building quality of life, I wanted to know how much time you think you're going to spend or maybe even have to spend in your primary against City Councilman Lewis Wheeler. You two are the only two people running for mayor this year, obviously, so that makes the primary very important there, because he seems to have a very different view of how the city should be spending its money than you do and where that money should be spent when you've got it. So do you think that's going to be a significant portion of the conversation over the next 3 months or so?
I do. I think it's a basic philosophical difference. I believe that we need to be aggressive, that we need to make strategic investment, that we have got to continue to think in a progressive manner, that doing things the way they've always been done won't help Frankfort thrive in the future. And then there's the flip side of the coin, that we need to be much, much, much more conservative. And I believe there's a cost to doing nothing as well as there is a cost to doing something. And how I gauge what I do is, and I was so happy that Councilman Wheeler was actually in the subcommittee meeting with us. We met with Frito-Lay executives here about 2 weeks ago on their $160 million expansion. We will, by the way, now have the largest Frito-Lay in the world here in Frankfort once that expansion's completed. And Mr. Wheeler got to hear it with his own ears. Frito-Lay was over the top happy with how we were investing in Frankfort. The amenities we're creating, nickel plate flats, the investment into our roadways, the obtaining of grant funds and private dollars to move some larger, more transformational projects like Ivy Tech Community College or even Prairie Creek Park. We have to invest in a way in our city that attracts more jobs and attracts more private investment. That is not just going to happen. That comes from a concerted, responsible effort. And so he was able to even hear that with his own ears. So when we're bringing levels of investment, $160 million, we're going to have the largest Frito-Lay in the world. I have top-level executives that are happy with what is happening in Frankfort and telling us these things are going to help us attract and grow a workforce that will fuel our business. I know we're doing something right. In my heart, I know we're doing something right. And as long as we continue to keep things within the lines of our budgets and present balanced budgets, which we have, that's a fact. We just moved $129,000 into the city's rainy day fund here about a month ago. So we're spending in a way that's allowing us to build our rainy day. When I came into office, there was $1.6 million in city general. Started this year, we had $3 million in city general. So the facts are, yes, we're financing some projects, but just like someone does in their daily lives with their mortgage or with health care, we are doing so within our existing revenues. We're investing strategically to grow investment and grow jobs, which will ultimately drive down tax rates by building assessed value. I believe that's what we need to be doing. And yes, I plan on talking about that as much as I can and sharing the facts with people and answering questions and letting the results speak for themselves.
On another election-related matter, you've got four primaries for city council seats, each of them between a couple of Republicans and one of them four people running for three at-large seats. How much are you going to be involved in those races and trying to back candidates in those races?
Well, in a primary, I try to stay in my lane of traffic. I will say that the councilmen that are running for re-election, I think our council has been very effective in what they have done. We've had a good working relationship. Obviously, you're always going to have those bumps in the road where you disagree, but we've gotten a lot done as a city. And what I would say is all these economic development projects, whether they be Frito-Lay or the $35 million investment that Donaldson's is making, 75 new jobs, it's been because of them too. We've worked together as a team. Our relationship with Clinton County government is very, very strong right now, and that's something that's important for our community to move forward. So I won't be out on the front lines. I've got my own campaign to wage and my own race to run, but I would encourage voters to take a look at the current city councilman's track records because I think they will be impressed.
So it sounds like you are kind of backing some people.
Well, I'm saying let's look at the results of what's been done and people can make a decision based on that. What I'm saying is I'm not going to be outwardly endorsing individuals and knocking on doors for other individuals. I've got my own race to run, and as far as I'm concerned, Stan, I'm 10 points down. I'm 10 points down all the way up to Election Day. I feel like I'm the underdog. That's the mindset I'm going to have, and we'll work hard and leave it out on the floor and see what happens come May.
I've got to ask about the at-large race, which includes Eric Woods. We talked with you a couple of times during the kerfuffle surrounding the Humane Society last year where you and Mr. Woods had a couple of public dust-ups. Do you have a dog in that fight?
You know, I'll tell you what, Stan. I'm so thankful that story came to light and we did all that because it really gave Eric and I a chance to sit down and really gain an understanding of one another. And although we might not always agree on topics, I really do believe that Eric comes from an excellent place in his heart and he really cares about this community. I'll tell you that right now. And so, actually, through that obstacle and through the past few months, I've really gained a great respect for Eric and the work that he does in the city. And I look forward to working with him in the future. He brings a lot of wisdom to the table, and from running a business, he does a lot of great things for our city. So what I can tell you is I've gained an even new level of respect for Councilman Woods. I appreciate what he does, and I look forward to working with him.
On to other things in our last couple of minutes. This winter has been a little rougher than the past few have been. How are your city's streets and your salt supply holding up?
Well, our roads have just been pummeled, Stan. They really have. This winter weather has just wreaked havoc, and that's why I'm so happy. We'll be paving $956,000 worth of roadways. We just bid those projects out. We should be getting bids back to open here in the next month at Board of Works. So we were successful with our Community Crossings Matching Grant that we submitted through the state last year. Our crews have been out filling potholes nonstop. Our salt supply is still good. Washington Avenue is under construction right now. As you well know, Phase 2 will begin next year. It will be let out for bid this July. So, you know, I put pencil to paper. By the end of this year, we'll have dumped about $11 million into our roadways over the past 8 years. We're proud of that. We have much more work to do, but going after grants like Community Crossings allows smaller communities like ours to get that much more done. It allows us to maintain a balanced budget and get into all of our neighborhoods in the city, and so we're going to continue to do that because that's one thing I've heard from my constituency. We want stronger roads, and so we're going to continue to focus on that, and there's a lot of paving on the way for the citizens of Frankfort come this summer.
Speaking of trying to find grants and things like that, we reported this week on a bill in the Indiana General Assembly that would give grants to small city-owned water utilities like yours to be used for improvements. But the one sort of caveat in it is that they want to try to find utilities that can partner with one another, with other people like themselves, to try to collaborate and save costs on projects. We have talked on this program about some of the big bills that are going to come due for the water infrastructure improvements you are hoping to do there in Frankfurt. Is this a bill that you were following at all?
Well, you brought this to my attention, and I think it's wonderful, and we'll definitely keep an eye on it. Our utility infrastructure is really what gives us the edge when it comes to economic development. And in order to maintain a low cost of living and to keep those rates as competitive as possible, it's important that we're constantly looking at partnerships in ways that we can hook on more users so it defrays the cost for everyone that's paying into the system. The one thing Frankfurt has is we have water. We have water for days here, just topographically, the aquifer that's underneath our city's footprint. So what I would say is we're even open to looking at smaller communities or even a city of like size that's geographically near us to see if there's a partnership possible where we could sell them water, maintain an economic development advantage because we never want to give that away, but constantly find ways to be innovative in order to keep costs as low as possible. And just a quick factoid on the electric side right now, I was talking to our general manager this morning with what electric is being bought at right now by the city of Frankfurt through IMPA. Our kilowatt per hour charge to our citizens right now is actually lower than it was before we did a rate increase here just about a year back. That's due to our tracker factor and that cost of energy that we're buying that energy for is so much lower. Our kilowatt per hour is actually lower. So that's just a little factoid for people out there. And again, we're keeping an eye on this every single day. We're trying to keep ourselves competitive. We know having our utilities is great, but we've got to keep costs as low as possible. And that's what we're always striving to do.
This idea of collaborating with other like-minded entities or cities or people seems to be the kind of flavor of the week in terms of getting money from the state of Indiana that's come up all the time in the last couple of years. Do you have those sorts of allies, those sorts of collaborators with whom you are talking and you are waiting to do this, or are you having to try to wait for a grant opportunity and then go out to people and say, do you folks in Attica, do you have something like this? Do you folks in Crawfordsville have something like this?
I think we're just getting to the point in time where we can have this conversation. I mean, our electrical infrastructure was failing miserably a year ago because it had not been invested in properly. Our wastewater treatment plant was at capacity. We still needed to get things in order in our water department, and we're still striving to do that. Now that we've made steps forward in all those areas and we have our fundamentals taken care of, now we can really look at regional partnerships, even partnerships with Clinton County government to light up the interchange at State Road 28 and I-65 and really advance our footprint. And we want to do all this because, again, the more users we get hooked up into our utilities, it's an advantage for our ratepayers. The more people we get paying into the system, we defray costs over a bigger population, which brings costs down or at least keeps them stable moving into the future. So we're ready to have those conversations now that we have our house more in order. We have our general manager, Todd Corey, leading the charge there. I have had at least one city reach out to me in regards to water, and this is something to definitely keep your eye on in the future because Frankfurt is interested in being a partner.
Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time, and hope to see you at the WBAA Community Forum on March 5th.
Thank you, Stan. God bless.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember to go and fill out that survey at our website, WBAA.org, if you are a Frankfurt resident, and listen for our show next week at this same time with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.